Hello, welcome back to the Recap Show with Sid, Mon and Key. In this episode of Friday Talks, we have a very special guest who has graciously accepted to talk to us about dogs and other interesting topics. Pranita, a certified canine consultant and Dognition evaluator, is on a mission to strengthen the bond that people share with their pets that holds the potential to be one of the most loving and fulfilling relationships. Sidestepping the traditional dog training methods, Pranita relies on positive training methods which inculcate cooperation, consistency, and positive reinforcement. These methods help enhance the behavior of dogs while also ensuring that they have a whole lot of fun along the way by learning various dog tricks. So let's hear what she has to say to us.
Welcome to the DKF, Shaman. Thanks for joining us.
We want to talk to you about how you started this journey and we also have a lot of questions to ask you about the dogs. So we're very excited for this session.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm looking forward.
Thank you for coming. So, no, first question, how was Bark and Bone born?
It was born out of sheer, I can say frustration of myself that I would just keep switching jobs every year. When I was doing corporate jobs, I would not stick anywhere for longer than a year. And after doing that for 4 years, changing 4 jobs, I just put a hold on myself. And I was like, now, before I find the fifth job, I need to reconsider everything that I'm doing. And okay, that's when I came across that, you know, should I need a change in the career path? Should I do something else? Because I'm always hitting a dead end here, even though I'm enjoying the corporate job. But after a point, it's like, okay, what next? It's not having a long-lasting effect and it's not giving me the content feeling that I needed it. So that's when I came back and Mon got born, because I thought of doing something around dogs. I had no idea, no knowledge about dogs. I've not even grown up around dogs. So I was a complete novice person, complete amateur, like a simple dog lover who would go and meet every dog on the road. Now I don't do that because I know better. So I just started researching a lot. What can one do around dogs? How can we make a career? And that's how I came across courses of dog training. I did one course. Okay, let's give it a try. It was a 2-week course, you know, just a beginner, just a tester. So I was like, no harm. I have the money for the course. Why not give it a try along with my job? I didn't quit my job till then. And I gave it a try just out of curiosity. And I had my first client also after the course. And I just had a gut feeling that this is it. I like doing this. I can do it. And I'll see what to do. I'll just quit my job and I'll figure it out. So that's how Bark and Bone was born. Within a month, I came up with my company name also.
Oh, that's interesting. So when you were doing the course, did you own a dog?
No. I didn't. For the first 6 years of my career of doing as a dog trainer, also, I didn't have a dog. I had for 4 years in between. Now, again, I don't have a pet of my own. But I have many students who are like my pet, who I am their godmother. So I don't feel left out.
That's nice. So, what's your relationship with dogs? You know, before starting Bark and Bone, were you friendly with them? Were you attracted to them the first sight? Were you scared of them?
So I was friendly with them. I always loved them. About being scared of them, I only remember when I was like, I think a teenager or even younger. I remember I was once I just saw a I reached the wrong door. I rang the doorbell and the door opened and I realized it's not the house I was looking for. And there was a dog, and a very tiny dog. It was a Dachshund or something. And that dog just barked at me and I got scared and I ran down the stairs and that dog chased me down the stairs. That's the only time I've ever been scared of dogs. I don't remember how the switch happened of me loving dogs. I just started loving dogs and then I was not scared of any. I would go in wanting to say hi to every dog on the road. And I had one, two friends who had dogs and I would play with their dog and that's it. I didn't even have in my surrounding too many pets. So they were like, whichever dog I interacted with were literally just strangers, dogs on the road.
So when you did the course, was it practical or theoretical? Do they teach you with dogs, no? Or is it just based on words and lessons?
It's theory and practical both. The course was divided into theory and the same day we would even have practicals.
Oh.
And like we would be asked to practice certain things and there were demo dogs. So like there were other people's pets who already know certain commands whom we could practice with.
Okay.
But our learning actually more and more happens on the job. This job is such that, you know, no matter how much you learn on the course, it's more about what you do after the course, the self-study. You have to keep researching, keep updating yourself with new things around, because I train everything based on science, based on behavior, not old school, just using power of fear on dogs, but trying to understand the dog behavior, trying to understand what goes behind their mind. And whatever scientific researchers have proved. So you have to keep updating yourself and you have to keep doing more and more courses and learn from everyone around the world what's their perspective about dog training, dog behavior. And then you come to a level, you reach a level where you have your own way of training. The goal is the same, but everyone has a different technique. You know, the foundation is same, using positive reinforcement. The goal is same, we need the dog to reach this goal. But how you reach there are 10 ways to do that. And everyone has its own unique style to reach that. So you, that's why there's a lot of on the job, because the dogs are going to teach you. You go with something in your head, today I'm going to do this, but the dog will be like, no, not today. Try something else.
Yeah.
So you always have to be ready with a plan B, plan C, because maybe the dogs are not in the mood, maybe the owner is not in the mood of focus, and or maybe like right now it's monsoon. So I was like, oh, it's raining and we wanted to do an outdoor. Okay, what else can we do? So you always have to be ready with plans.
What do you do when they don't accept you, you know? Not all the dogs are welcoming at the first time.
Right. Yeah, many dogs have trust issues. Many dogs are scared of humans. Then I just give them their time. Because my job is more of building relationship of the parent and the dog.
Okay.
And it's okay if the dog is not being my best friend. It's completely fine. As far as I can just be the I can just bridge the gap between them, because they have to be the best of friends. There have been many dogs who are aggressive and who have, so that they have reached to a level to coexist with me in the same room and not stress out. But I haven't touched those dogs through the entire training program. I've not touched that dog at all. No matter how much I wish to, like, I've done so much for you. I want to hug
That's
you and
hard,
touch you.
Right?
It is very hard. This job is very hard. It's because people think it's like, oh, you're working with dogs, but you're also working with people's emotions. You are also working with things which are not in your control. Like in our cases, we see some dogs where I see it's going worse. And I can push the client only to a level. I cannot just take the dog away from them because I think they're doing it wrong. It's after all their pet. I have no, you know, right to say over a point. I can just suggest what's the right thing to do. Then it's their decision. Then you have to let go. And it's tough. You learn through the way to let go and then forget it. You can't attach yourself completely to each and every dog you meet. Otherwise, you won't be able to survive in this field.
Yeah.
By the way, Key has two dogs in a home.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
which
do.
one?
Yeah. One is PIDs and the other one is Daxund.
Nice. They're so rare to see these days.
Yeah. Who? Daxund?
Yeah, and the Spitz. They were really popular in 90s.
Okay.
Now they are very. Now you only see Labradors and Beagles and Cocker Spaniels.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
These you see a lot. And obviously Huskies.
When it comes to bigger dogs, how do you handle them? Like if they are more aggressive?
Nothing like that. They're more aggressive. Everyone has its personality and I handle them just how I handle small dogs. In fact, it's important to handle small dogs thinking they are also like big dogs because people, you know, with big dogs, people are like, okay, we need to work on these issues because of the height, because of the size, because we can't manage the weight. And they forget to respect that and work the same way with a small dog. With a small dog, what they do is every solution is just pick up the dog and get the dog to do it rather than asking the dog verbally to do something. Like even from moving from point A to B. Mm-hmm. With a big dog, you will teach the dog, okay, listen to me. You need to listen. I can't carry you. But with a small dog, you'll forget it. Mm-hmm. And you just carry the dog. And that's why small dogs have more behavior issues because they have never been trained, never been treated. They've just been carried around like a soft toy. And then they are blamed to be snobbish, but they didn't know better. They never dealt with any stress or any fear because if anything comes across, the parent also gets scared and just picks up the dog. The dog never learned to face its fear. Mm-hmm. And they always just want to be carried. But it's not that they are more aggressive or they are, it's just that with every breed, yes, large dogs are more working dogs. That's why they're more active compared to the small dogs. But there are small dog breeds who are more active. Like terriers are very active. They're as active as your retrievers.
Oh.
They're tiny in size, but they're super active and they need a lot of work.
Well, with my own experience, the Dachshund is more aggressive than the Spitz. You know, they are very aggressive sometimes. They active too. It's fun to be with them.
They are very, you know, specific about what they want, what they don't want. Compared to Spitz, they are very particular and little moody also. So that's why they need a certain kind of training from start. But I've also seen sometimes some aggression is also genetic, which you can't help it. Unfortunately, they have been bred and, you know, because of a lot of puppy mills and wrong breedings, they just see how healthy the dog is and they just breed the dog. Obviously, not all puppies get those genes, but some puppies do. And then if you have genetic aggression, you can't take it out of the system. You can just manage it. You can just control it, you understand the triggers and just, you know, walk around it. That's it.
Okay. So what are the most common mistakes you notice pet owners making with respect to disciplining their dogs?
The most common mistake is they do everything that they can in puppyhood. So when I say everything means, okay, allow the dog on the bed, let the dog bite. It's okay. It's just a puppy. So for everything, the defense statement is it's okay. It's just a puppy. It will grow out of it. And it is right for human kids, but not for dogs. We don't realize that for dogs, if you're allowing it now, the dog thinks it's allowed for the next 15 years. And people, and also the novelty is there, right? It's a new puppy in the house. You just want to be lenient. You don't want to straight away start disciplining the dog because it's so cute. And you're like, we'll figure it out later. Let's just enjoy this moment. And by the time they're a teenager, they're 6 months, 7 months old, they've already learned tons of bad behavior because of us, because of over pampering and no boundaries, no rules, no discipline. And then they are all over the place and they're over our head. And then it gets very difficult to teach them because it's not that it's impossible. It just takes twice the effort because you have to unlearn your habits. You have to make the dog unlearn its habits. So, and to make the dog unlearn is much easier than the humans changing their own habits.
True that. So, when it comes to training, are there any different techniques when you train dogs, or do you consider any techniques more effective than the other ones?
So, what I personally use are positive reinforcement techniques. There are different words. You can call it force-free, positive reinforcement. There are some balance techniques also, which is like you use negative reinforcement as well as positive reinforcement. So what I believe is understanding the dog's emotions, why it is doing certain thing, and then working on it. So I work holistically when it comes to even what the dog is eating, the kind of environment the dog is in, and what's the dog's health, physical health also. Everything affects behavior. So if the dog is not enjoying its food, that also means a lot. That is going to affect the behavior. Then your dog is irritated or frustrated, wants to eat but not happy with the food. You know, it's just how humans are. We feel good when we eat whatever we like.
So when you train dogs, do you also tell the owners to make them eat specific foods than the other ones?
I guide them if the dogs are not enjoying the food. So I guide them. So there are some dogs who are not food motivated. They are fussy about their food. You know, they're just bored. So I guide them how they can make it better, how they can make the dog like it. How also some dogs like to work for their food. They're not going to eat if you just give them in the bowl. Especially, like for example, dogs like huskies, they're definitely not going to eat if you just give them in the bowl. But if you work them out and then give them in a bowl, yes, they'll eat. Or if you make them do something and give the meal as a treat, they will eat because they've earned it. And because that's how their, you know, genes are.
Yeah,
they ran for whole day, they would go sledding, they would run for whole day, and then they would get the meal. So the system is wired like that. And it's only Labradors and Beagles who are foodie and who will never say no to food even if they're not working, and that's why they're like big couch potato. But, although they're very active breeds, but they become big couch potato because they become overweight. So I speak about nutrition when it comes to, I also see the nutrition is affecting the health. Dogs start having skin issues. If they're having skin issues, then they are itching all the time. If they're itching all the time, they're irritated all the time. And if they're irritated, they have to vent out that irritation. And that's where you see the behavior issue coming. The dog is being destructive. The dog is not listening. It's all over the place. So that's why everything goes hand in hand. And I guide them with basic nutrition, how they can, or if they need in-depth nutrition, then I guide them which is the right person to go to. I also, if I see any kind of physical symptoms, which obviously, if being a first-time pet parent, a lot of pet parents will not know it's a symptom, it's something wrong. Like a lot of pet parents don't know a growl is also something wrong. They think it's fine. It doesn't have to be addressed. It's okay. So they have to be guided through, you know, everything. And then I help them. So even with the physical health. Now, that's the reason I also did fitness training course. Because I cannot be a vet now. I don't even want to study for 5 years. But with fitness training now, at least the way I even see a dog walking, I can say there's something wrong in the limbs. Let's get an X-ray and let's get a check. Your dog has hip dysplasia. I can just see the dog walking and tell you if the dog has hip dysplasia. And or the way the dog is sitting, the way the dog is lying down and getting up with a grunt, those signs of pain can be guessed easily. So it helps me in training. It helps me inform better to the pet parents, and it helps them give a better quality of life to their pets. Or much earlier than waiting till something worse happens and it's right in the eye that, okay, something is wrong. So that's why I follow the holistic approach of when I do my first consultation also, I ask, okay, what is your dog's schedule? What does your dog eat? What are the rules of the house? What is your dog? How is your dog exercising? And how does your dog sleep? How much does your dog sleep? Everything is asked in detail.
What, according to you, are the top 5 healthiest human foods that can also be fed to dogs?
There are many.
Many.
The healthiest is pumpkin, sweet potato, apples, banana, and obviously any meat protein. Meat protein is the healthiest for them, which they need a lot in quantity.
Okay.
But like some families do restrict, like, you know, since they don't consume meat, sometimes they don't give their pets too. Is that wrong or right? Or can a dog be vegetarian?
We are no one to say right or wrong. A dog can be vegetarian. It won't thrive. If you compare two dogs, one who's eaten non-veg food, who eats meat on a regular basis, and you see the health of a vegetarian, non-vegetarian, yes, you will see the skin being better, the coat being better, the dog being more active, more muscular. You know, and it's not that a vegetarian dog cannot be active. They also will live long. There's nothing that they want. Like in past, dogs have lived just on roti and doodh, which gives no nutrition, but they have survived. So it's all about your choice, like what kind of quality of life you want to give to your dog. It's just about a personal choice. I understand some people cannot give vegetarian at all, and I suggest them, can you then give something dehydrated? You don't have to cook. You don't have to touch. There are many companies now who sell dehydrated meat protein. Where, you know, if someone else is okay, if you have a walker, if you have a help who can go outside and feed the dog, is that okay? If that works, then still you're giving more nutritious meal to the dog than giving protein, which is not considered protein in a dog world. That's my personal opinion. But I know dogs who, I've read about dogs who are vegan also, and they are still doing lovely.
Vegan, that's great.
Yeah. But I personally feel like I'm vegetarian myself. But I personally feel I don't have to, you know, force my choice of living on the dog.
Yeah.
We are anyway forcing so many things by domesticating them. So this is the least I can do for them.
Why do they eat grass?
So they eat grass. One obvious answer is for natural cleansing. And their body actually tells them. They're quite clever that way. They know which grass to eat, what is more nutritious for them. If some dogs get less fiber intake, you know, less vegetables, or something is missing in their meal, then also they eat grass. It's not always because of upset tummy, but sometimes it's also because of that. When dogs eat, you know, when they eat lambs or chickens or goat, those animals have eaten grass. So dogs are used to eating digested food. Because they eat their tummy and that already has grass and it already has certain vegetables. And that's why they get all the nutrition just from eating the animal. They don't otherwise go and eat, you know. If you see in the wild, they will not go and eat a tomato or a carrot. They just have to eat the animal and they get everything from that. So even when you go and see dogs who are on raw food diet, the vegetables are cooked. Not all vegetables are given raw because their digestive system doesn't handle that well. They handle raw food, yes, very well, but not the vegetables and fruits.
My dogs, right? The Dachshund one eats more raw vegetables than the Spitz.
Maybe he likes the crunch. Maybe he likes the taste. It's also about the palate, you know.
Is it safe to feed them with milk? Is it safe to give them milk?
It is safe. It's not harming unless your dog is lactose intolerant. But is it giving them any additional nutrition? That's what you have to check.
Okay.
Like whatever we are feeding them, it's instead of considering, obviously we do consider toxic, non-toxic. But in non-toxic, we should also see that what is it, just adding on weight, or is it actually giving some nutrition? Like goat milk is being considered to be very nutritious for dogs, and it's been given worldwide, but not any other milk is giving any additional thing. Like curd, okay, yes, it's a probiotic.
How do they get the calcium? Don't they require for their bones? Okay.
Yes, animals. They get all the calcium from the bones. The bones that they eat of animals, raw bones and cartilages and everything that they eat, that's where they get their calcium, their glucosamine, everything they need for their own bones and joints.
I've seen dogs circling around before peeing. Is there a specific reason for that?
Yeah. One that builds pressure when they do that. Especially they do before pooping, you know. Not all dogs do it before pooping for sure. For peeing, some dogs do, some dogs don't do. Secondly, what also happens is they sweat from their paw pads. So why they circle around, because they want to leave their scent wherever they're peeing. Yes, their pee is also leaving a scent. The whole reason of where they want to pee poop, why they're so particular, because it's they have to leave their scent. They have to leave a communication to other dogs and which other animal who can guess it. So that's why that's another reason they walk around a lot. And that's also why after doing their business, they do the back hind leg digging. You know, they throw away the sand. It's not for hiding the scent. It's for spreading the scent. Like
so
I know,
that is their place.
Yes, it's to spread the smell as much as possible, because that makes them comfortable. It makes it their territory, and it also sends an information to other dogs. From pee, they can actually, from smelling other dogs' pee, they can actually find out it's male, female. It's a dominant personality. Is it a dog in heat? And, you know, they get a lot of information by smelling other dogs' pee. That's why they're constantly sniffing the ground, along with sniffing other things in the world. Why do they?
Dig floors.
Normal
floors. Tiled floors.
It's just in their, it's wired in their brain. Digging is a way of venting. And digging is also a way of making their own space. Like when they are out in the garden, they dig because the mud is cooler one level below. So they dig and they make their bed and they sleep on it. That's, and they also dig to make their space comfortable for themselves. And dogs don't realize it's tile, I'm not supposed to do that. Or it's a, you know, it's a bed, because they do it on bed also. And I know many dogs who tear bed sheets by doing that.
Yeah.
But it's just, they're making their bed. And the other reason of digging is venting. Like how they chewing helps them vent out any kind of emotion, even digging helps them vent out. It's just a natural action which they enjoy.
A common misconception is that dog's wet nose is a sign of good health. Is it a myth, or is there some reason?
It is a myth. It's not always the thing, you know, because yes, when they have fever, the nose goes dry, or when they are dehydrated, the nose goes dry. But that doesn't mean in any other illness, it cannot, you know, it will be dry, because there's some illness where they don't get fever at all. For example, if they have urine infection, their nose will be wet only. They're not going to get fever. So it is a myth. It's not like it's always going to be dry if they're sick, or it's always going to be wet if they're healthy.
Speaking about making the dogs learn from their very young age, how often should dog owners brush their puppy's teeth?
They can brush once a week. I suggest more than brushing to actually give them bones to chew on. Because the kind of dental health they'll get by chewing on the bones, they will not get by brushing. Because with brushing, you also have to first train your dog to, you know, not immediately eat up all the paste. Let you brush it properly. And in that process, we don't know how much we are actually brushing, how much the whatever paste we are using is actually going on the teeth. Because the moment in that first 2 seconds only, the dog has just licked the entire paste.
Yeah, I've experienced that.
So with giving the bone, what's helping is one, they're getting good nutrients and minerals. Two, the teeth is being cleaned, all the tartar gets cleaned off. Three, it is also helping them calm down. It is helping them exhaust and vent everything that they are feeling. If they're anxious or if they're bored, if they're stressed, if they're over-exercised, over-excited, over-stimulated, even chewing helps that. So it literally solves multiple purposes by just giving a bone.
Do you suggest the normal bones from the meat shop or from the pet shops?
So unfortunately, the pet shops in India don't have raw bones. So you can get raw bones at if you know a good butcher, or you can also get raw bones from. But there are few brands who 2-3 brands in India now who sell raw bones. Raw natural bones. They just clean it up for you. They dehydrate. Some even dehydrate it for you or air dry it for you. And you know, some people don't like getting it from the butcher because you have to clean, you have to do the whole process, and you're not sure how it will be. So then you can buy it. But the pet stores, the retail stores, which are everywhere in India, they don't have these bones. Obviously, they can't keep it. It's gonna not. It's perishable, you know. So it's what they have is the rawhide, which looks like a bone, which is the typical bone shape. Although the bones, when you actually buy the raw bones, they are not that shape. So those are called rawhides. And rawhides are not good for dogs because they are made of everything which should not go in the system. You know, it's processed. It just has little bit taste of the raw bone. It has a little marrow, but majorly it has leather, plastic, byproducts, whatnot. So it's very bad for the dogs, and you shouldn't. I know many dogs who've eaten it. Nothing has happened. But if you know something is bad, why to give? You know?
Yeah.
I know this is the argument by many people. You know, I've all my life, my dogs have eaten this. My earlier dogs have also eaten this, and nothing has happened. Like, people say even for chocolate, for coffee, my earlier dogs have always eaten it. What we don't realize is earlier dogs had better digestive system. They had less medication in their body. They had better lineage also. They came from good lineage. Just how our parents and our grandparents didn't fall as sick as how we are now in our generation. Because the kind of processed food we are eating, even our vegetables, we are not sure about what we are eating. Everything is into chemicals. It's the same thing with our dogs also. That's why now dogs have more medical issues. They have more sensitive tummy. Almost 1 in 3 dogs I know have allergy issues. Earlier, this was not the case. I have heard stories where someone's dog has eaten coffee ice cream for 15 years and has had never an issue. Has had chocolates all their life.
When she was young, she used to drink coffee. And also eat chocolate.
Yeah, I never had something, right? But if now you get a dog, same breed, you will have plethora. Like, that's why now, thankfully, we have pet insurance also coming in India. Because we really need medical insurances because the amount of money we are putting in their ad vet bills.
We've also got some questions from the Instagram story we posted yesterday. One person wants to know, how do we make dogs like their owners?
One is obviously give your dog food that they like. And loving your dog means letting your dog do what your dog likes. That is running, digging, getting dirty, you know, playing a chase game. And swimming. Some dogs love swimming. So figure out what your dog loves. What's the need of your dog? And do that with your dog rather than creating a life which you think your dog should have. I think that I keep giving analogy of humans because it's easiest for them to understand. But it's exactly like that. How we tell parents, don't put your dreams on your kids. Let your kids figure out what they want to do and support them. It's exactly that for the humans and dogs. We do consider them our kids. But we also then do, we already have a preconceived notion that my dog should be this, 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 this. Mm-hmm. Which is fine. Yes, you'd want your dog to be confident. You want your dog to be social. You don't want your dog to embarrass you in mm-hmm. front of anyone. You can train your dog to be like that. But sometimes you also need to understand there's, you know, a limit to it. The dog mm-hmm. you got has a certain personality. We can work around it, but somewhere we have to let go. Mm-hmm. Like if I got a complete fearful dog, but I wanted a confident dog, doesn't mean I'm going to give the dog away. I'll be like, mm-hmm. okay, in that fear, how much can we push? How much can we desensitize the dog? How much can we, is the dog comfortable with this, that, via training? What can we achieve? And we come up midway. And then mm-hmm. I provide the dog what the dog likes. Provide, like fearful dogs love running in open field. It really mm-hmm. builds their tolerance. It builds their confidence. So I'll regularly do that rather than forcing my dog every day just to walk in a busy street where the dog is just getting stressed out and our trust is being broken, our relationship is being broken, and my dog then doesn't even want to hang with me or just be at home and be on the couch with me. Mm-hmm. So if your dog is having a fulfilled life, your dog is going to love you and love every moment with you. Mm-hmm. Even when you're out and you're around, you know, hundreds of humans, hundreds of dogs, your dog is just going to be hanging with you because it will be like, okay, what next? What are we doing next? What's the next adventure?
That makes sense.
So the second question from Insta was, why do dogs sniff each other's ears or butt?
That's how they say hi.
That's nice.
That's why they go in our underarms and crotch area also. Because that's where the strongest scent is and that's where they get the information about the other person or other dog. Oh. They never meet face to face. So for dogs, meeting face to face is threatening. It's mm-hmm. not threatening when they have bonded. Like even mm-hmm. with humans, when dogs meet, they don't immediately stare in your eye. If you are continuously staring, they do feel more threatened. And especially dogs who are scared of humans, they will, you know, if you're staring and you're talking to them, they'll bark more or they'll run away from you. But once they bond with you, then the staring becomes a sign of affection.
Okay.
So next one is, are pit bulls actually dangerous or they seem like that?
They aren't dangerous and they don't even, I think, seem like that. It's just that they were unfortunately raised, you know, by people in a wrongly manner. And they were not, as I was speaking earlier about meeting the needs. If you don't meet a certain dog's needs, the dog does become frustrated and the dog does become, end up being aggressive. If you're not understanding the dog, if you're not building trust with the dog, then the dog will react. And unfortunately, these breeds were blamed because of the humans, because of the way the humans raised them. See, all dogs were bred for a reason. They had a purpose. And it's not their mistake that, you know, pit bulls were bred to fight. It was not their mistake. And if that energy was taken out, say by teaching bite work, like there is a sport called protection sport, where dogs are taught to bite on a bite sleeve. Like people are wearing protection gear, jackets, thick jackets and stuff, and bite sleeves. Where dogs, I don't know if you've seen videos where dogs run and they come at your sleeve and they tug on your sleeve, on your arm.
Yeah.
But it's a game. Those dogs are taught that as a game. Because they leave the arm instantly on the handler's command. It's not aggression at all. But that dog needs that because it was bred for that reason. It was bred for protection reason. So if you teach the dog to do that on command and leave it on command, you've met the needs of the dog. The dog is completely content and fulfilled. And the dog is a happy dog. It's not going to have any issues with anyone.
Mm.
And now, forget pit bulls. Now, so many dogs are, you know, having bad names, even Rottweilers. Or just because they look that way, people give them bad name. But I know Rottweilers who have been therapy dogs. Because from start, they were bred in a, they were raised in a particular manner. They were socialized well. They were taught structured games to vent out their energy. And they're calm dogs. They're great therapy dogs.
Yeah, so I've seen a couple of Rottweilers who are very friendly.
Yeah, they are. I know Rottweilers who are as friendly as Labradors. You wouldn't believe, I deal with cases where I deal with Golden Retrievers who are aggressive. Labradors were aggressive, and we never thought they could be aggressive, but humans went and twisted them also because of the way they raised them. So it's all about how we are raising them and what we are doing. Are we ruining them? Are we understanding the dog while we are raising, or we just want to use our power? We just want, you know, I see dog lovers also that even they whack the dogs, even they are like, no, this, my dog is supposed to do this. Why is it supposed to do it? If you want something, get a robot. It is not supposed to do it. It's a relationship. But people think because dogs are trainable, they should learn to do everything that they want. You know, and that's where your empathy should come in. And a lot of dog lovers also forget empathy there. It's just that, why is the dog not doing what I want? It's like, it's a living being. It can only do us to a certain extent. And it also has bad days. Like, you will hear people saying, my dog is moody, will do whenever it wants. One, obviously, because not trained well, because you taught your dog it's okay if it doesn't do sometimes, it will still be rewarded. And two, your dog is moody because, okay, fine, it's having a bad day. Give it a break. You know, cut some slack. So, yeah, so I don't think pit bulls are aggressive. They have just been stereotyped because of human mistakes. And also
the way they look, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Also the way they look. And also the problem happened is, which is even now, people who have dogs with issues, people who have dogs who have aggression issues, they should be more careful. They should, one, train their dog. They should know the dog's triggers, and they should be more careful and more responsible. They are not. They will still take their dogs in scenarios where the dog will react. And then it's not the dog to be blamed, because the human has control over the environment, right? If I am leaving my dog off leash, when I know my dog is going to react and attack, it's my mistake. It's not the dog's mistake.
Yeah.
And obviously, but the dog will be blamed.
The next question is, how to control dogs when they bark out of control, especially during times like Diwali?
It's the same thing. We need to first understand why they are barking. Is it anxiety, or have they learned that barking gets attention? Is it emotionally driven barking, or it is just a bark as a game? You know, and only then I can give a solution, because a solution would work.
Fireworks.
Yeah. No, because of fireworks also, some dogs learn that if I bark, my own parent will give me attention. My parent will give me something, or a game will start. And some do bark because they get anxious. So then you need to work on the anxiety. You need... Yeah. So if it is anxiety or if it is fear, then you need to mask the sound by playing something else in the house, by playing music, or just switching on TV. By drawing the curtains, shutting the windows, and also by exercising your dog. And you can give your dog a bone if it's ready to chew on a bone. So distracting your dog with something, or just giving your dog a comfort space wherever it is comfortable. If it is comfortable being next to you, sticking to you, you can give comfort there. Or it wants to go in some dark corner and sit, you can do that. So it's all about teaching your dog how to deal with anxiety in any given situation, not just during firecrackers. Because if the dog is barking during firecrackers, I'm sure that dog is reacting in an anxious manner in many other situations also. So it's all about guiding your dog when you're anxious, what all you can do, what's a healthy manner. Because continuous barking is making the dog stressful more. It's not solving the purpose for the dog itself.
So the final question from the Insta is, why do people cut the tails of Doberman and other breeds?
They used to cut it as a practice when the dogs used to work, when they used to hunt with the humans, like early days, because it would give away if the tip sometimes, you know, it give away, it's a giveaway to people across. Sometimes it is a it gets stuck in the bushes. They can't run fast because of the tail. So that's why they used to cut it. But now it's not a need. What happened is over the years, I've heard from some breeders that over the years it just became a myth that you have to cut because of the physical attribute. Because sometimes dog shows asked that if it's not cut, you can't participate in dog show. And if you can't participate in dog show, then you can't get the, you know, the championship. And then how will you show that your lineage is good? But those championship dog shows are just about the looks and physical attributes, nothing else. Because, and then secondly, some breeders who didn't do enough research or didn't try to study the breed much, and they were just breed, they just heard from here and there, and they thought that cutting the tail helps the spine. If you don't cut the tail, something happens to the spine. This is the bizarrest thing I've heard from one of the breeders. And it was so funny. So I was like, where did you even get that knowledge? Like, how the dog was bred with a tail. It would not have a tail if it would do anything to this point.
So, I've even heard someone say that because they'll show a sign that they're very friendly by wagging their tails, and that's why we cut them off.
Yeah. So you know, like especially cocker spaniels, it used to be cut because so that they could run fast between the bushes to flush the ducks. So there was a reason, but now there is no reason. And I get very happy when I see Doberman, cocker spaniel, with even boxers with a full tail, you know. And it helps so much to understand what they're trying to say, because it is a big part of their body language. It's a big part of the communication. So now we don't need, because now they, unless they are in working, even in working line, they don't need. I one of my mentor in Australia, he has Springer Spaniels. They all have their tails. They are search dogs. They don't need to cut it. So we know better. So, you know, we need to act on it. But it's the human mentality. A lot of people just follow the herd. They don't try to dig in. Why was this done? Why did they come up with this decision? That curiosity is not there. Some who are curious, they dig in and then they change their thought process. Okay, I don't need to follow this because everyone for years was following this.
Because I seen my neighbor doing that. When I asked why, he just said, I don't know, we follow it.
Exactly. And that's something what we follow everywhere, right? Not just in the... It's just we blindly follow. We don't dig in. Yeah, like, why was it done? Nobody asked.
Yeah.
Remember, I guess that's it for today. Thank you so much for joining and for answering every single question patiently. We
thank
got
you
a lot
so
of
much.
We did enjoy.
Always fun chatting about dogs.
Yeah, true.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for joining.
Welcome. You guys have a great day.
Sure, you too.
So that's it for today, guys. Thank you for tuning in. We learned a lot and we had a lot of fun recording this episode. Meet you soon in the next one. Until then, catch you on the flip side. Have a good one. Bye.